Shalom Aleichem Raboisai. Again, meeting in a funny way, but to Lamaisa be together on the same line is an element of togetherness. Okay, this week we're starting to run out of time, but we're really reaching the climax of the Haggadah. So we may spend a little bit more time. There's a lot that I want to get in the next couple of days. We may spend a bit more time. Lina, there won't be too long. And if you want to leave earlier, it will not be included in the exam. Let's begin. We've been building up till now the story of the development of Am Yisrael, the story of the Shibud, the story of the subjugation of the servitude in Mitzrayim, the various aspects of it, the multiplication of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. And we basically brought it to the point of understanding the bitterness, the difficulty, the suffering of the slavery. And now we reach the point, this is really the culmination, the climax. This is, Hashem has it now in place to go ahead and start making his moves. What was really the point of all this? We discussed. The point of all this was that Hashem wants to introduce himself to his people. So he brought them to a place of despair, a place of suffering, and now he's going to step in. And at this point also, by and large, many of the Jewish people weren't even connected with Hashem. You had Shevet Levi, who remained faithful all throughout, but many other people had sunken through the hardships, had just reached a place, like Chazal tell us, Halaloiv David Azara, Halaloiv David Azara, they were imitating their Egyptian masters. They had some faint connection to their tradition, but they were not really living that whole reality. And as far as they were concerned, there was nobody who could help them. They were at the very bottom of the caste system, the bottom of the pyramid of this greatest empire in history. Paroi was all the way up at the top with his whole team of sorcerers and all their mighty gods. And nobody could threaten them. Nobody could shake them. And therefore, as far as many of the Jewish people were concerned, this was a reality that was not going to change. There wasn't really much hope. They suffered. It was terrible. But what could they do? Okay. And now we reach the point where Hashem says, okay, now it's time for me to make my move. The suffering reached a certain peak, and the people were crying out. And Hashem stepped in. And here we have to understand the setup of the Makkos and what really the idea was. Let's understand something. It looks like Hashem has to go through this whole process with Paroi. He tries this, doesn't work, tries that, doesn't work. Until finally, Makkos Bechiris does the job. But that really wasn't the case. As Hashem expresses it himself to Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Bo, Hashem at this point moves into a game of cat and mouse with Paroi. Paroi right now considers himself the mightiest thing in existence. And he has at his disposal all the sorcerers, all the great gods. Different nations around have different gods, but he has the mightiest team. And Hashem is going to begin playing with him a game of cat and mouse. And that's what Hashem says to Moshe. I was playing games with him. When Hashem decides at the end that Makkos Bechiris at the time has come, so we saw the way it works. Hashem steps in a split second, Paroi is chasing the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. But that wasn't how Hashem set up the Makkos. The way Hashem set up the Makkos was a whole process. Each Makkah went on for a week. And there was negotiating. Paroi said, okay, I'll let them go. So Hashem stopped the Makkah. Then there was a three-week break. And then there was another Makkah, again for a week. It was a process that went on for 9 months with... Basically, what Hashem was doing was playing cat and mouse with Paroi. Why? Because the purpose here really was, if Hashem wanted the Jewish people out, Hashem could have simply made Paroi have a change of heart. But this is not what Hashem was doing. Hashem, the real purpose of the Makkos was aimed at the Jewish people. I want you to see who I am. And I want you to see what I would do for you. And therefore, Hashem sends Moshe to Paroi, and tells him, tell Paroi that the God of the Hebrews wants him to let his people go. Okay, Moshe shows up, and Paro is unimpressed. The God of the Hebrews. The Hebrews are the most pathetic race in Egypt. Underdogs, subhuman. All of a sudden it turns out that they have a God. Moshe comes and reports that they have a God. Okay, different nations have different gods, and different gods have different track records. Some gods are stronger than other gods. Every god has its strengths. This god doesn't have a very impressive track record. Paro doesn't feel the need to relate to him at all. So Paro says, "Mi Hashem asher eshma bekoile? Who is Hashem that I should listen to him?" And basically, Hashem says, okay, very good. That's really the question I was waiting for. This is the question I was waiting for, and this is the question I want to answer. Who is Hashem? That is what I am here to demonstrate now. But Paro, you're just a pawn here. The point isn't even you. The point really is my children. I want them to see who is their Hashem, who is their father, that they were perhaps unaware of all this time because I left them in that state for my purposes. But this is what I want now. And here begins an intense course of Hashem ripping apart the mightiest nation of the world and ripping apart the mightiest forces of nature, showing that they're just his servants, all these things that were considered gods, in order to show the Jewish people, look who your God is. Look who your God, look who your father is. And now, before we start talking about the Makkos, I want to make a general comment. Let's understand the structure of the Makkos. Like we said before, the structure was a Makkah for a week, and then there was a break for 3 weeks. Then again a Makkah for a week, and then again a break for 3 weeks. Now, Chazal tell us in the Haggadah, right before the Makkos start, that there was Dever. Dever is especially emphasized. Now, the Mefarshim say, why is Dever singled out from all the other Makkos? The Mefarshim say that every Makkah came along with a pestilence. Besides the Makkah of Dever itself, every Makkah came along with a pestilence. There's a great significance here. Now, Avigdor Miller says, as we're experiencing now, what happens when there's pestilence? What happens when there's a plague? People have to shut themselves inside. The Jewish people then in Mitzrayim were in a very similar state to we are now. Shut inside, you couldn't really go out much. And they're seeing what's going on in Mitzrayim. The purpose of this was that the Jewish people should be studying this. Each Makkah was a shiur in getting to know Hashem. Each Makkah was introducing another angle of Hashem's greatness, of Hashem's might. And the point of it was, the Jewish people were to be learning this, were to be learning it, studying it, and it wouldn't be so simple. There would be an exam at the end. Before I take you as my people, I want you to go through an intensive course of learning who Hashem is, this Hashem that you're going to be connecting with, and I want to be able to test you at the end to see how well you got and internalized the message. And therefore, Avigdor Miller says, it was pestilence. It forced them to stay inside. They couldn't go about business as usual, so that they should be studying what's going on, learning it up, discussing it, and trying to get as much insight as they can out of it to who Hashem is. And you know what? Each Makkah, each person was able to glean more insight according to his level. The Makkahs were learned up by different people according to different levels. And then more than that, there was a 3-week break in between. Rabbi Avigdor Miller put that is, what were those 3 weeks? Those 3 weeks were the Chazal HaSashir. It was the review of the Shir. They were meant to be spending those 3 weeks learning up and internalizing deeper and broader understanding of Hashem. Now this played out, again, in different ways, different people. This is, we refer back to the beginning of the Haggadah, where we said that afilu kulanu kachamim, kulanu nevanim, kulanu, no matter how learned and no matter how well you know the story, you should still be engaging in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know why? It's for this reason, because the Makkos contained endless lessons about Hashem. You could get further and further insight by studying them. And what we're meant to do, just as, and therefore, no matter how great a sage is, no matter how many times he knew the story, there was still what to be gotten. We give the illustration of those five sages who sat the whole night in Bnei Brak, again, discussing Yetzias Mitzrayim. They were gaining further insight into what was going on. And where this begins is really just trying to picture the Makis in a real, live way. And then trying to see what was Hashem conveying there. So here we actually approach the Makis. Here we actually approach the Makis. And like we said before, this was a challenge. Pari said, "Mi Hashem." And Hashem said, well, he said, "Who is Hashem?" Hashem said, "Well, you're about to find out." Hashem accepts the challenge, and now there's going to be a showdown between this Paro, who considers himself the mightiest force in the world, and the Elokei HaElokim, Hashem. So what happens? So first Hashem says, okay, you want to know who I am? You want to know who I am? We start with Makas Dam. Makas Dam. So, first of all, just in terms of its significance, the Nile was one of the Egyptian gods. The Nile was a source of Egyptian sustenance, and they worshipped it. So in round number one, this, so to speak, chas v'shalom, just using the term in order to bring out the point of the struggle that was here, what Paroi was thinking of as some no-name god, right? This pathetic nation has their little god. In round one, he knocks one of their mightiest gods off its feet and has the Nile humbled, humiliated, basically just one big stench. And now all of a sudden the Nile, that had been the source of blessing from Mitzrayim all these years, is now putrid and is just spreading disease with all the dead fish and with the disgusting smell. So round number one, Hashem is saying, here, see, you want to know who is Hashem? Look, one of your mightiest gods, who you all worship and who you all depend on, look at it now. And just to picture what Makas Dam was like. We grew up with these stories, you know, since we're little kids, and it's like almost like a fairy tale. But if you try to picture it in real life, when a person took his first drink and discovered that it was dam, there was no way to wash your mouth out. Just think about that. There was no way to wash your mouth out. Any sweat was blood. There was no way to rinse yourself because all water was blood. Anything that contained any water in it, it turned to blood, including the moisture in the air. This alluded to earlier in the Haggadah. Can you imagine walking through the street? Any of the moisture in the air is blood. The air was thick and putrid. And this is what they were living at that time. They sweated. They wept. Even the spit in their mouth was all blood. And there's no way to get away from it. There's no way to get away from it. You want to, you could. Every cup of water costed a lot of money. It was a luxury that not many could afford, but that was the only way to get a little bit of relief. Can you imagine, we understand what a fatal Makas Dam was? If you picture afterwards what Mitzrayim looked like, each Makkah so decimated Mitzrayim. How many people must have died? Imagine that going on for a week. How many people must have died? How much livestock must have died? People were impoverished because of the money that they were forced to spend to buy money, but also the psychological blow. Their great God that they had been worshiping for so long turned out to be helpless. Now, there was also deeper significance, because I'll make a point of pointing out the Mida Keneged Mida with all of the Makas. Let's understand that this is not just, it kind of sounds like cute, like they lined up, you know, different things that the Mitzrayim did with the Makas. But this is not, this is really the Avodah that we've been talking about, of seeing what is Hashem conveying. Hashem was conveying messages with these Makas. This is what you did to my people. This is what you're going to experience now. And it was for the keen and for the insightful to be able to notice that and realize that Hashem is showing, I saw this and I saw that. And therefore, denial, where so many Jewish babies had been drowned, all of a sudden turned to blood. What was this thinking? What was this conveying? What this was conveying was, you were drowning children all the time, spilling so much blood freely, thinking that there's never going to be an accounting. Look, it's all being thrown back in your face now. The Nile turning to symbolic, and the Mitzrayim, who worked with superstition, they got the point. It wasn't lost on them that there is a symbolism being conveyed here. Then we move on. Tzfadea, with the Makkah of the frogs. First of all, let's again appreciate what was actually going on here. If you think about frogs in our terms today, a frog can be anywhere between 2.5 and 30 centimeters, approximately. 2.5 and 30 centimeters. You have tiny little frogs, a frog that can be the size of the top of your finger, and a frog that can be like a football. Now, you picture all of a sudden Eretz Mitzrayim is full of frogs, which means that when a person stepped on the ground, he basically went flying because he stepped down on a slimy rug of frogs. And a person lies down to go to sleep. First, he feels a little something tickling him in his ear. One of those tiny little frogs got into his ear and is just wriggling around in there. Couldn't get relief from that. They didn't sleep for a week. And he finally gets rid of that frog in his ear. All of a sudden, a football lands on his stomach and knocks the breath out of him. Wherever they went, the frogs were in all the different sizes to be able to get to inconvenience them in every possible way. But what was the Mida Keneged Mida here also? Hashem was conveying a point. I've been watching what's been going on all this time. The Egyptians used to make it a sport. Part of what they did with the Jewish people was, Chazal tell us, they had them do all kinds of unnecessary, tedious avodas just for the fun of it, in order to persecute them. So they would tell them, we want you to catch frogs and other things for us to play with. All of a sudden, Hashem sent a dearth of frogs, plenty of frogs. You wanted frogs? Here you have plenty of them, all over the place. Another more ominous point that Chazal say in terms of the Mida Keneged Mida of the frogs was that when they would carry off a wagon load of babies to the Nile to throw them in, the women would follow along, the mothers would follow along, the guards would distance them, and they would follow along. There would be a whole procession of wailing mothers, a whole procession of wailing mothers following the wagon along. And the Egyptian soldiers used to imitate them and mock them. And all of a sudden now, there was this ongoing wailing sound which reminded the Mitzrayim of the wailing of the mothers. They couldn't get away from it. It was haunting. The wailing of the mothers that they had mocked all these years was all of a sudden being thrown back in their faces in the form of all these frogs. And this was once again Hashem showing, I was watching everything, I saw everything, and it's going to be thrown back in your face now. Then we move on to the Makkah of Kinim. Makkah of Kinim, you have to also here picture the scene. Paroi, the thing that you consider most secure is the ground underneath your feet. Right? The ground underneath your feet. All of a sudden, you drop knee deep into the dust of the earth. All of a sudden, all of the dust is a crawling, creeping rug. Knee deep. And as the person drops knee deep into the ground, all of a sudden, that crawling rug starts moving up over him. You know, picture a person, he's a layer, a crawling layer covering him. He's a coat of kinim swarming all over his body. This is what they looked like at that time. And the Mida Keneged Mida here was also very profound. They wouldn't allow, we'll see also with Makkah Shechem, they wouldn't allow the Jewish people to bathe. They wanted to make a point of dehumanizing them. They wanted to make a point of humiliating them. And then you have the master race, the Egyptians, are all good-looking and perfumed and clean-shaven. And look at these disgusting subhumans crawling with lice, crawling with boils, etc., etc. Same idea with Shechin. And this was part of the whole humiliation process, dehumanizing them, debasing them. And all of a sudden, the master race are crawling with this coat of kinim, in a worse way than any Jew ever was. So this is again, Hashem is saying, okay, you wanted to know, look what I've been showing meanwhile. You wanted to know who is the God of the Hebrews? So first of all, you saw your Nile knocked out of commission. Then you saw your Nile with Makas Tzvadeya actually turned against you. It's loyal worshippers. Why? Because it's a humble servant of mine, and it started shooting all this Tzvadeya at you. You still wanted to know who's the God of the Hebrews? Well, look, the very ground that you stand on, the ground under your feet, belongs to me. If you feel secure standing on solid earth, know that you're standing on my ground. Then we move on to Makas Arev. We're not finished yet. Arev. What happens here? Hashem says to Parah, you feel very mighty, don't you? You know why you feel so mighty? Because you don't understand how dependent you are on me at all times. You think I'm just another god of some pathetic nation? You don't realize how everything about you is totally in my control. You are able to have the luxury of thinking yourself so mighty. You know why? Because there's an awful lot of things you don't have to be worried about on a regular basis. For example, the oxen and the horses are pretty strong creatures. And should they decide to rebel, you'd find yourself in a helpless situation. But you know what? I protect you from them by putting a natural fear into their hearts. And you know what else? There are all kinds of wild animals surrounding civilization, in the forests and in the jungles around civilization. But again, I put up an invisible protective barrier to enable you to have the luxury of thinking you're so great, because these wild animals are scared of entering civilization. All I have to do is take those barriers away. All I have to do is take those barriers away, and then look what happens. And all of a sudden, the land is overrun by wild animals. And not only that, but the domestic animals turned against their owners. And Pari is starting to really taste his own helplessness, his helplessness, his own feebleness. Okay, now there's also another element of Mida Keneged Mida here. What was the Mida Keneged Mida? The Chazal tell us that part of what they would do when they would make them work, besides beating them, etc., they would frighten them with these loud roars. That was part of the humiliation process. And here, all of a sudden, you have that big, huge Mitzri taskmaster who used to so arrogantly roar and strike terror into the hearts of his Jewish subjects, and all of a sudden now they see him ducking behind a chair while there's a huge bear standing over him and roaring. All the different forms of torment. Hashem is now showing the Jewish people how the Egyptians are going through those very torments. We're going to continue Bli Nether for approximately another 5 to 10 minutes. Dever. With Dever, I'm going to start speeding up a little bit. Dever, first of all, to appreciate the significance of Makas Dever, we have to remember that everything ran on animals, okay? The cars were horses and donkeys. Those were the cars. And the trucks were camels. And all of the machinery were oxen. And bank accounts were sheep. That was livestock. The person's wealth was in livestock in those days. So imagine if all of a sudden, in the entire country, all vehicles would break down. That's even worse than all the limitations that we're experiencing now. All vehicles would break down. There would be no way of transporting food from one place to another. All vehicles would break down. And also, all bank accounts would get wiped out to a large extent. But the truth is, it was more than that. In terms of the lesson that Hashem was conveying, Hashem was saying, up till now, I was showing you how the earth is mine, the Nile is my humble servant, all different parts of nature. I'm the one protecting you from animals at all time. But now I want to show you that the spark of life is in my hand also. Look, everything around you is dropping dead. I'm keeping you alive. Hashem says, at this point already, it was really starting to get scary, because Hashem is showing how just that a zap of his finger, so to speak, things drop dead. And Hashem says by Makas Dever, Hashem says, now you already understand that I'm keeping you alive. Look, everything around you is dropping dead Because I'm not finished showing you. I'm not finished answering the question that you asked, who is Hashem? Now, I have to appreciate that afterwards, it took a long time for me trying to get back on their feet. There are no oxen now for plowing. Go rebuild the economy after such a makkah. Then we move on to Makkah Shechin. Here with Makkah Shechin is once again Hashem dealing a deadly blow to the ego of the master race in the humiliation of these boils. Right at this point already, Pari's team of Khartoumim don't want to stand next to him against Moshe. They're humiliated. But besides that, just in terms of the torture that this was, Chazal tell us that there was a combination of different types of boils. Some were dry, and some were moist. And you know that what helps for one is torture for the other. And yeah, they had it on the bottom of their feet. They couldn't stand. They couldn't sit either because it was there too. So to lie down, that was torture. It was all over the body. So what were they doing? They were busy the whole week, shifting from foot to foot, sitting, standing, just moving, not just to alleviate pressure, not to be on anything at any time. And if a person lost his balance that way and fell, oh boy, did that hurt. And by the time the makkah finishes, they're all left scarred emotionally and physically. Then we move on to Makkas Barad. In order to appreciate Makkas Barad, we have to appreciate that in Mitzrayim there never was rain. Right? The Nile provided all of the water. For Mitzrayim to suddenly hear thunder and lightning and to suddenly go through any kind of storm was already something, a trauma to their system. It was mamish like an air bomb, like a bombing. And you know, they thought that the heavens were falling down. And here, once again, they also hear the Koilei Selekim, as Pari described it. It was Hashem roaring at them, and this was so frightening. And Hashem is also showing how all the different aspects of nature just come together to do His will by bringing together fire and water, which usually are obviously rivals. So the lesson of who is Hashem is getting more and more clear. But we have to note, there's one thing that we have to note with Barad also, a particular point that's brought out with Barad that we discussed earlier. Barad, Hashem tells the Mitzrayim, anybody who wants their livestock to survive should bring it into the house. In other words, what you had going on at that time was that a Mitzri family was suddenly living together with their donkeys, their sheep, their cows, their horses, all together in the house. You can imagine what the house smelled like by the time the week was over. Hashem was making a point here. Hashem was saying, you know, by this time, everybody is starting to see that there's something called an Elokeinu Elohim, a God who's above them all, a God who's not like all the other gods. You can manipulate him this way, that way, has this strength, that strength, a little stronger, a little weaker. This is the Elokeinu Elohim. He is the master of it all. Everything is in his hands, and nobody can manipulate him. So now, there was a double point here. First of all, the existence of such a God. But second of all, who is he declaring as his people? Such a slap in the face of the Mitzrayim. If there is such a mighty God, his interest should be in that master race, the Mitzrayim. But no, he's interested in that pathetic slave race that they all despise. And in fact, what does he tell the Mitzrayim now? As far as I'm concerned, you can all live in a stable together. You, the master race, the Egyptian, you can live together with your donkey, with your horse, with your sheep. As far as I'm concerned, you're all the same. The only ones that I'm interested in are those Jewish people that you so despised. Okay, we move on to Makkas Arba. Okay, just in terms of describing Makkas Arba, you have descriptions from not so long ago, from the Midwest in America, of what a plague of locusts looks like. You have millions of them traveling together, and they can finish off 100,000 tons. When they really hit in big numbers, they can finish off 100,000 tons of produce in a day. It was much greater than all this. And here, if Makkas Barad destroyed a very, very great percentage of the crops, what happened now with Makkas Arba is that Hashem came and basically just finished the job. All that was left to eat in Mitzrayim was the grasshoppers itself, was grasshoppers themselves. Then, With Makas Choshech, Hashem comes and makes another statement. The mightiest of all forces of nature, which was considered the greatest god of all of them, was the sun. And here Hashem comes and says, you want to know who the God of the Hebrew is? Who is Hashem? Look, even the sun is just a humble servant of mine. Even the sun is just a humble servant of mine. And that also turns off when I say so. And now at this point, we know that there were two stages of Makas Choshech. Right? There was first the point where it's just pitch dark, and then there's the point where people actually couldn't move. And here Chazal say, this was mamish connected what they did to the Jewish people. There's no future. There's no way of helping yourself. You have no idea how long this is going to last. You're just stuck, static. This was what Chazal say, Hichshichu es einem shel Yisrael, by providing them with no hope for the future. They have no idea how long this is going to last. Whereas with the other Makas, it went for a week, but here they saw it intensifying. It also went for a week, but they didn't know that. They saw it intensifying after a half a week. Where is this going to go? Now, at this point, Paroi is already a beaten man. The truth is, after many of the Makas, he was already a beaten man. And Hashem played games with him, like we said before. Hashem simply made a mockery out of him. What he did was he beat him to the ground. You can picture that, you know, they're sitting at the negotiating table. Hashem says, you know what, Paroi, you're the boss. You let him go? Up to you. Paroi says, no. No? Okay, fine. Boom. Knocks him to the ground. And then what does he do? Lifts him up by the ears, puts him back at the negotiating table and says, it's up to you. Again, no. Boom. Back to the ground. He's simply playing games with him, cat and mouse. And here at this point also, if the Makas Choshech, Paroi is shakily back at the negotiating table, and he takes the bait when Hashem says, well, you're going to let him go? He takes the bait, but he's already so beaten that he says, yes, 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 he's ready to send everybody. But, don't take the cattle. Don't take the cattle. Hashem's point is that he wants to beat Paroi all the way down to the ground, just like he did to the Jewish people. He's not even allowing himself, not letting him save face in any way, not even allowing him to say, okay, everybody could go, just save the cattle, which would let him at least maintain some semblance of Amanda Omar here, right, of a negotiating part, of a power here. Hashem says, no, sorry, everybody has to go. And this power he can't handle, right? This is where he already threatens Moshe, if you come back here, I'll kill you. And that's fine. So, we're basically at the point where Hashem has been playing with Paroi for all these days, throughout all these Makas, and the Jewish people are meant to be watching all this, studying it, and internalizing the lesson of who is Hashem Elokei Yisrael, who is their father. And we're reaching the climax. And this Emirat Hashem, we'll save it tomorrow. We'll talk about Makas Becheres. And then from there, Be'ezus Hashem, we will lead into the significance, because this really leads into it directly, of Pesach, Matzah Umarar, Be'ezus Hashem. Again, I imagine that tomorrow also we will spend a bit more time than usual. And then we'll see what we're up to tomorrow. We'll plan what we'll do on Tuesday, Be'ezus Hashem. Now we'll complete the recording and then unmute the oil if anybody would like to say anything or ask some questions.